Hey, hello? Is this our correspondent from Maine State Prison?
Yes, Dean Brown. How
hey,
you doing?
All righty. How about you, man?
I'm hanging in there, I guess.
All righty.
As well as you'd be expected.
Too bad you can't get anything in from the Blues Festival.
Well, actually, we can. I was listening to it on 102.5.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, but I switch over to the Weekend Roundtable this time every week.
All righty. Well, you know, we're supposed to have somebody go out there, but it looks like they haven't gotten there yet. We got a remote thing. Apparently, the rules are... You can talk to people between the songs and all that, but you're not supposed to be playing the actual music on the air. Something like that.
That doesn't sound very good.
Yeah, well, you know, they're just trying to make their money, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, like I said, you could always go out in the... Well, you can't, but people can go out in the boat and listen to it for free out in the harbor.
Well, I'm kind of tied up at the moment.
Okay. Well, tell me about what's going on there. I was just talking about the bail system, and it seems to be pretty random here in Maine.
It works for the rich.
Well,
yeah, it's like everything else. It's it depends on who it's supposed to apply to. I got a new correspondent for you to work with here that's willing to help out.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Is it someone that can come on the air, or are they going to?
Oh, he will. He will. Okay. We're working out the logistics right now, and he's a credible person. I vouch for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's the Maine State Prison president of the Maine State Prison branch of the NAACP. And so he's been fighting for some good causes for, you know, prisoners being able to family ties program, prisoners being able to make videos for their send out to their families and loved ones to.
Well, those are great ideas.
Yeah. It's costly for us to get the prison on board with it, but Captain George has been working with them pretty closely, and they've come up with a pretty good thing that helps out quite a bit. Right now, he's under some... he's sending you a four-page letter that he's written to Baldacci concerning racial discrimination inside the prison by high-ranking prison officials, and seems to be condoned by the warden. I don't know. But he's running around using the N-word himself presently, but the inmate who's a secretary to the NAACP in here was confronted by he's a white man, and he was confronted by a white officer and asked why he's doing, quote, the nigger's bidding, you know, in relation to his participation in the group. The group is not racially motivated. They're a black and white and Indian and... Hispanic members of the group. It strives to help all prisoners, not just the black ones. And so there's, you know, good unity there, and there's, you know, racism really isn't an issue here, but there are some staff who kind of make it an issue, and that's something that...
You mean they're like trying to stir up trouble?
Yeah, some of them do. One sergeant went out of his way to paint an inmate as an informant, let people know that he's a confidential informant, so that people will go after him for that.
Now, that wasn't that fellow from Massachusetts, was it?
No. Hmm. He was an informant from Massachusetts.
Right.
There's no denying that he was sent here for his own protection, but there was a guard that went and put his personal case history out on the street for other people to know, and it ended up causing him a lot of problems. He came here to avoid those, and if a staff member has a problem with a prisoner, you know, they can get back at you like that. I just experienced that. I got a pretty bad sunburn a few weeks ago, and 2 weeks beforehand, the warden had put out a memo saying there was no sunbathing was no longer allowed. I hadn't seen the memo. It hadn't been posted, but the letter was put up. And after my burns, they started pushing the issue, and people said, well, that's crazy. We've always been able to walk around without our shirts on. They said, well, you can thank Dino Brown for that.
Okay.
He's the reason that the warden put that memo out. Well, the warden put his memo out 2 weeks before he even got sunburned, but that's besides the point. It's just a matter of people stirring the pot and trying to create situation here where they have violence and unrest. We're down to three softball teams now. They tried to do a league that was kind of inexperienced in how it was set up, but, you know, the lower echelon people did their best to try, I suppose. But it just, it didn't work out. It wasn't done with the forethought that has gone into the interleague sports for years past. This new approach was just another attempt to create a lack of interest and participation. There are too many people that just won't get involved in it. All these professionals are talking about how idle time is you know, the devil's work, especially in prison. But nobody seems to be willing to do anything to reverse it. Another thing I really wanted to mention that made me super, super proud and happy is I was told that Lance Tapley of the Portland Phoenix won an award for his articles exposing the prison.
Well, I couldn't have done it without you, and I hope that he, in his acceptance speech, he gave a good word for all the information he was gotten.
That's awesome. I had a guy that I told him this morning about it. He says, well, you tell that reporter to call me if he wants to print the truth. I said, I didn't see you people putting any facts out there, and every one of you has had an opportunity to stand up on your own legs and, you know, speak out and see what's happening. And that videotape sure as heck didn't lie. That showed what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no lies there. The commissioner had to admit that, yeah, look, I don't want to talk about it. These problems exist. Let's try and fix them. You know, and I... Another piece of good news I got was the June issue of the Prison Legal News was just received here last night. I don't know why it comes a month late, but we got it, and the front article was, the front cover was the Lance Tapley's article.
No lie, is that right?
Yes, on the Prison Legal News, June 06 issue. So they ran the full thing, torture in Maine's prison, front page article, and they published the entire article, and they even put their own little commentary on the end of it, which was fascinating.
So this gets around to people in all the prisons then?
All over the country, yes. Mm. And that's, you know, I can't afford to subscribe, but I've got a friend who does, and he shares them with me as they come in. It's amazing. It's something. I'm surprised the prison didn't cut the article out, you know.
Well, yeah. Maybe they're starting to feel like they're under the eyeball of the media now, and they can't quite pull off this stuff.
Yeah, I'm hoping so, because I'll tell you what. Did you get a chance to read that letter I gave...
To Beth? To our friend there?
I gave Joe a 5-page letter about this place.
No, I haven't gotten that. When'd you get it to him?
Oh, the week before Mike James went on trial.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, they mentioned him in that, too. That was good. But anyway, the letter I wrote to the commissioner regarding the, you know, my particular situation, what I've gone through. My kidneys are shutting down now. They told me that there's a albumin. I guess it's a protein your body uses the most.
Yeah.
And it gets filtered through your kidneys and goes into your bloodstream. But there should be a level around 30. I don't know, 30 parts per million or what the ratio is, but the number's supposed to be around 30. Mine is in excess of 130, which indicates that the albumin is not leaving my kidneys except through my urine.
So something has happened then to your kidneys.
Yeah, but because of my diabetes, when the sugar's so high for so long, it crystallizes in the ends of blood vessels and small arteries and stuff that work between your organs. So when they can't, you know, when that function goes, then the organ itself isn't able to function. So it's being dumped into my bladder instead of filtered into my bloodstream. So my body's not getting that, and that's a sign of kidney failure, they said. So I don't know what... I mean, I understand what the complications of that are. I don't know time-wise what I can expect to happen. I haven't really experienced much more than, you know, being real tired and weak and muscle and weight loss, but I don't know how much longer I got to go.
Well, you know, and there's always the possibility, too, of kidney transplant.
Yeah, well, I've been on this medicine strike for so long that I'm refusing medication. I stopped the strike and I started taking the meds when they promised me my job back, and they promised that the toothbrushes will be returned to the Supermax. The same people who concocted my demise, Captain Cutler and Deputy Wood and O'Farrell, they shot me down for my work. They intervened with it. And the Deputy Warden, Rubber Stamp Riley there, who told me that, you know, he would work with me to get my job back and my stereo and the toothbrushes and whatnot and the Macs, and just totally backed out of it. But Bob Walden, the man who's the manager of industries, didn't have any problem with me getting my job back, and he submitted the paperwork. And he said, listen, Dino, we're giving you your job back. Please start taking your meds. You're hurting yourself. I said, are you giving my job back? He said, yes. I says, all right, then. I'll talk to medical and see if I can get them to push for the toothbrushes and the Macs. If they assure me that they will push for it with me, then I will start taking my meds, and we'll finish this up some other way. And so he told me that a week later or so, security had shot me down. I mean, I started taking my meds and everything for a few weeks, but then we were seeing a little bit of progress, bringing my bad numbers down. And then they, May 22nd, I was supposed to start back in industries, and that's when security said no. And then the deputy warden and the woodshop manager, Walden, talked it over, and Walden told me that he decided he didn't want to fight for me on that issue, because I had this extracurricular stuff going on with the website and the radio station interviews and all that.
And therefore what?
Huh?
Therefore what?
Therefore he's not going to go to bat for me to insist that I get my job back. I'm just screwed out of my job. So I stopped taking the meds again and said, you know, we'll just take this back and refight it and do what I should have done in the first place. See, last week when I spoke to you briefly, you said you were looking at the policies of the prison, and I asked you to look at the high-risk placement policy. You recall seeing that?
Well, I'm trying to think of what I saw in that one there.
Okay, well, Procedure B is the one that they used to put me on high risk. And this policy, the high-risk policy, is what... It's a process that the legislature approved and the Administrative Procedures Act approved the prison to use to place somebody in such a restrictive setting. I mean, that's like taking somebody from the streets and putting them in jail. You have to have some kind of protections. The U.S. Supreme Court, Wilkerson versus Ohio, 2005 decision, declared that prisoners placed in the SMU do suffer a significant and atypical hardship associated with ordinary incidents of prison life.
Right.
And therefore, because of that, we are entitled to the procedural safeguard or due process safeguards that are guaranteed by Wolf versus McDonald, which was a landmark case in 1974 on due process. What due process a prisoner is entitled to before being subjected to the hold for long periods of time and loss of statutory good time, et cetera, et cetera. So all of this was supposedly considered into the process that the legislature approved to be used for placing prisoners in high risk. The criteria that they chose to use to justify my placement was B, prisoner escaped or attempted to escape or planned to escape or threatened to escape, and at the same time there's no reason to believe that this prisoner would not do so again in a less restrictive environment. That's what they checked off, and they all signed on to that they made a determination that I fit that criteria, but there's not one accusation against me for escaping or planning to or threatening to or attempting to. Nothing in my record indicating anything to do with escape, except an overall review of my record would show that in 22 years of incarceration, I've never made an attempt to escape. I possess certain skills with locks and electronics and stuff, but to say that, well, we're going to use that as grounds today, that you were going to escape or that you planned to, there's no plan unveiled. There's nothing. I have requested repeatedly in writing what of this criteria applies to me. And I'm told in writing by the Deputy Warden Riley that high-risk placement is an administrative decision. It was made, and, security determined that I was a potential escape risk. Well, the criteria doesn't say anything about potential escape risks. Every prisoner in the joint is a potential escape risk. You can't just throw them in Supermax for no reason.
Right, that's too much of a catch-all term. They can use for anything.
Which is the reason that the policy says you have to isolate it to this certain criteria. And they chose to place me on high risk because I escaped or attempted to escape or threatened to or planned to. But they weren't given any information that I did any of those things. They all just signed the paperwork. That's criminal. In the Chris Humphreys case, a prisoner who was assaulted by prison guards and the videotape was destroyed by one of them and documents were falsified by others, those guards are being charged criminally as a result of Lance's articles. They're being charged criminally for falsifying prison records. That's a Class C felony. Next week, I've given the governor's, I sent that letter out June 12th, so he's had plenty of time to do something on it. I mean, the commissioner has had plenty of time to do something on it, and then just simply chooses not to. I have no other recourse but to get in touch with either the criminal, the criminal investigator works for these people here, so, I mean, I'm just for a show of, you know, trying to go through channels. I mean, if you look at my prison record and all the documents I've sent out, I sent the whole copy of the file to the commissioner's office so he could have his own copy of all the paperwork that supports what I said. Rubber Stamp Riley says that I'm, a security said that I'm a potential escape risk and I'm going to stay on high risk until they say otherwise. This is after telling me that it's an administrative decision. Well, who's the administration? O'Farrell and Cutler? They dictate to the administration what's going to happen? It was, I mean, these people said, we want this guy on high risk. I mean, 4 days after Ward Merrill sent me a letter on the original, when I was first placed in the hole on this, he sent me a letter responding to a letter I wrote to the commissioner saying, listen, these policies have been violated and how I've been placed out here. It's wrong. I'm no threat to anybody. The warden wrote me back and said, you've been released from the hole, you've been put back in medium custody, and the disciplinary charges against you have been dismissed. I trust this answers your concerns. 4 days later, he approved my placement back in the Supermax for the exact same stuff. But they didn't write down because I had contraband. They wrote down, oh, no, he escaped or attempted to escape or planned to or threatened to.
Or thought about it. So it's... You can't get more arbitrary and capricious than that.
No, you can't. And I think I've been more than fair in dealing with it for 15 months. I've lost $4,000 worth of wages. Just in wages alone, not to mention the aggravation that's caused me. I guess I'm considered the mentally ill because I do suffer from depression. I was talking to a social worker the other day. She told me that I'm entitled to some protection as a mental health patient. Anybody with clinical depression, I think it's clinical. I don't know if it's clinical or not, but I've been diagnosed. She looked up on the computer. The shrink had diagnosed me as being depressive. So, but I mean, I'm not. You know, in as bad a situation as like you know Mike James getting the crap kicked out of him, or taunted and antagonized to the point where he hurts himself, but. Still, there's a level of stress involved here and mental anguish and dealing with, you know, the frustrations of it all. I mean, there's a right and there's a wrong, and there are people, it's like Joe Steinberger's letter to the governor about how this prison is defying the courts openly. We're not doing it. Well, you know, if I'm used to doing whatever the hell I want and some state trooper or prosecuting attorney come out and told me I had to stop, I'd be upset too if I didn't have any reason to believe I had to stop. These people have been allowed to do it for so long, they're incredulous that anybody would stand up and say, hey, you can't do this. You have to do that. You know, that just goes so much against the grain of, wait a minute here, I'm allowed to do what I want.
Well, Winter, I haven't checked with the governor. I know that we urge people to contact him and say, look, you know, make your employee obey the law there. You know, I mean, the head of Department of Corrections and the wardens have no alternative if when the governor tells them, he says to jump, all they can say is how far.
Yeah, how high.
Yeah.
Baldacci promised the correction officers union here when he ran 4 years ago, that he would clean out the top of corrections. Now, I think they must have rounded up some dirt on him and told him to just shut up and do his job, because that's how they seem to deal with everybody else around here. They got dirt on somebody, then they, you know, people just get back in their place and they stay there. That whole mentality has to be cleaned out. There's a sergeant here, George Millay, and Captain Brooks, I think it's Robert Brooks. These two men have the respect of a lot of the staff and a lot of the inmates together. And I would think that somebody that would be in a high-ranking position in determining the future of the Department of Corrections, it would be somebody that can work with both sides. To sit here and say that I'm a prisoner, therefore anything I say is biased or irrelevant or simply a lie or wrong is ignorant. There are problems with the system. It needs to be fixed. And to identify those problems, anybody who wants to be objective about it is going to have to look at both sides of the coin and see what the coin consists of and then work on trying to fix it. The mentality we have here that a running thing is punishment, 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 and nothing else. These people that throw you in the hole, you get in that hole with nothing. You can shave 3 times a week, but you can't have a friggin' toothbrush. It just makes no sense. It boggles my mind. I mean, what kind of security measure is that? Now, if a prisoner cuts himself, and there's been hundreds and hundreds of documented instances where prisoners have cut themselves out there, yet razors are still available. You have one prisoner sharpen a toothbrush and stuck it in his arm. But because the unit manager out there made a rule that nobody can have a toothbrush, nobody's going to overrule that unit manager, because that undermines their structure. He's got a certain level of status and tenure. Therefore, his rules stay. And you have all these different rules, and you know, when you complain about a rule, you say, well, listen, this can be abused like this. The guards will say, oh, well, nobody's going to do that. Well, wait a minute. How can you say that? You don't know what a guard's going to do until he does it.
Yeah.
And when he does it, it's tough luck.
Yep. Well, look, we're going to have to wrap things up for now. Now, tell me, you said that the president of the NAACP chapter in the prison will he be on next week?
I don't know. Hopefully. We're working on getting him your number on his list.
Okay.
Of course, the prison might try and, you know, screw that up so it can't happen, but he's under the gun for a lot of things. He's getting targeted with disciplinary action and you know, these random searches, how they randomly pick somebody out to search him. You get people who go months without getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's getting it, like, regularly.
So he must be having some effect, or they wouldn't be bothering him.
Exactly. Exactly.
All righty. Well, I hope to hear from that. And, you know, so we're going to try to find out then from Baldacci what is going on with the, you know, with this, with, the, you know, that kid's release to the mental institution.
Yes.
Because if he doesn't do anything about it, no one's going to. And all I know is right now, apparently, politics say he's running in a dead heat. So, you know, with his challengers. So he may well be...
He ain't getting my vote, I can tell you that.
Well, that's what he needs to hear. No vote if he's not being responsive.
No, I'll vote for communists before I'll vote for him.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I know. That's sad. I'm an independent.
There we go.
Green all the way, but, you know...
Yeah, all right.
I will not vote for my party if it's gonna take a vote away from the person that could put him out of office. That's how bad it is.
Boy, it is bad. All right. Well, look, Dean, thanks a bunch here.
Yes, God bless you, Ron. Have a good one, and
I hope you hear some more cuts from the Blues Festival here, too.
I'll go back to listen to it after your show, but I just want to say to the audience out there, enjoy the Blues Festival, and thanks for being part of WRFR.
All righty. Have a good one.
All righty.
All right. See you.
Bye-bye.
All right, we've been talking with Dean Brown, our correspondent at Maine State Prison.